December 3rd, Chamber 980, Bangalore.
First, I offer my unlimited obeisances and the dust to the lotus feet of my most worshipable, Bhikshukuta Dev. Vichalila Krishna Om Vishnu Pad, Astodhara Satshi Shimad, Srila Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada. And the same unlimited obeisances and the dust of the lotus feet of my most worshipable, Bhikshukuta Dev. Om Vishnu Pad, Astodhara Satshi Shimad, Srila Bhakti Vedanta Narayan Goswami Maharaj, to all of our Guru Varga, all the Sannyasi Gan, all the Vaishnavas and Vaishnavis, and all honored guests. I asked Sri Padvaikanas Maharaj this morning what theme I should follow in my talks, because I told him that I felt quite redundant being here, since there were already so many qualified speakers who've been giving class on several books over the last years. So I said, why am I here? Because without a goal, you can't have a process to reach that goal. So he suggested that I speak about, especially at this time, in relation to what we perceive as transpiring with Srila Gurudev and his present Leela, and speak about that in relation to my personal experiences with him since I met him in 1992, and that in relation to my personal experiences with Srila Prabhupada, who I met in 1966, and also my understanding of an atomic fraction of Srila Prabhupada's relationship with Srila Gurudev and the principle of Guru Tattva with them as examples. So that will be the theme of all the nights, and we'll see how far we get each night. So tonight I'll tell a little bit of my early times with Srila Prabhupada and with Srila Gurudev, and a little bit on the tattva of the leader that Srila Gurudev is doing now. So I met Prabhupada in 1966 in New York City in Tompkins Square Park, which is on the Lower East Side of New York City. And when I first saw him, as he was sitting on the Indian rug right in the middle of the park, I thought that he looked like a genie on a magic carpet, and that thought never went away. He was, because he was teaching us who were coming from animal life, he taught us a lot of very high philosophy and a lot of things that you would teach a baby. Like, for example, if a mother wants a child to drink milk, say to the child, if you just drink, and the child doesn't want to drink the milk, then she'll say to him, if you just drink this milk, then he'll grow up being strong. He doesn't want to do his homework, so she says, if you just do your homework, you'll become a great and famous lawyer. So similarly, Prabhupada would look at our journey to his bag and say, Krishna consciousness means to keep a clean bead bag. Of course, that's not what it means, but just to get us started in some semblance of human life. As we know, the spiritual master, the pure devotee, never gets affected by the material nature, and he never gets affected by illness. It's stated in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in relation to Madhavendra Puri, who in his last days of his manifested presence in this world became so, you could say, did the pastime of being incapacitated that he couldn't move to the point where his disciple, Ishwara Puri, had to clean up his stool and urine. So, in that regard, Prabhupada ran forth that the spiritual master is never can become an invalid because he's fully protected by the internal potency. That's also stated in the Bhagavad Gita. Mahatmanas Duman Partha Daivin Prakriti Mashita. One who's surrendered to me, he's never affected by the material nature, he's always protected by the divine nature, Yoga Maya. I looked on folio for the different times that Prabhupada quoted that verse, and one of the times was quoted in a purport in Adilila 4 of Chaitanya Charitamrita, where he says that the pure devotee, being under the guidance, under the protection and shelter of Yoga Maya, when Krishna played his flute, all the gopis left their husbands without the husbands even knowing, and Yoga Maya made a duplicate gopi, and then those original gopis were able to go out and dance with Krishna, apparently transgressing mundane moral principles. So Prabhupada was linking the fact that the pure devotee in our line is transcendental to the modes of nature and under the protection of Yoga Maya with the fact that his gopi form goes out and assists Radha and Krishna in their Radha Leela pastimes. So the spiritual master, who knows they're not purport, is never affected by material nature. But if he appears to be an invalid, it's only to give increased loving service to his disciples. So Srila Prabhupada appeared to have a heart attack in 1967. And at that time, he was calling the devotees in. This is in his apartment at 26th Green Avenue. He had an apartment just behind the courtyard, which was just behind First 26th Green Avenue Temple, which was maybe like 3/4 of the size of this room right here on the Lower East Side. So he would call us two at a time to do massages to him. And even though I have this kind of body, he let me massage his forehead while one of the brahmacharis, Achyutananda, massaged his feet. And at that time, he taught me, and I wrote it down, the Nisringa prayer, Namaste Narasringaya. And he, word by word, he gave it. And then he had to pray to Lord Nisringadev that my spiritual master hadn't completed his work yet. In fact, he was just starting it back in 67. So please let him continue his work. Then, same thing with Srila Gurudev, if I can jump over to the present. Although you know what he's appearing to have because you see the reports on the internet. Actually, if we're actually seeing through Anachaksu, which is the eyes of knowledge, rather than through our Pikachu eyes, Bhagavatam says that the eyes that don't see the Lord, they're no better than eyes of a peacock. And we know that a peacock's eye is very, very beautiful, but it can't see anything. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in his Vyas Puja offering to his Guru Maharaj, that is Srila Gaurakshodas Babaji Maharaj, in one of his Vyas Puja offerings, he says that without Guru, we're seeing sights of blindness and hearing sounds of deafness. We're not really seeing or hearing with these peacock feather eyes. So we see one thing with our peacock feather eyes, and if we want to see through jnana chakshu, the eyes of knowledge as opposed to the eyes of ignorance, or shastra chakshu, the eye of scripture, which is the only way that an intelligent person sees. In fact, it's mentioned in Prabhupada's translation of Nectar of Devotion that one of Krishna's qualities is that he is Shastra-chakshu. He sees through the eye of scripture. So, seeing through that way, we know that any manifestation of any disease is also just a, in Parambhurdev's words, the show of a magician on stage. Just like a magician, in fact, Srila Gurudev gave the example that there was a husband and wife magician, and they had two. They did this really amazing magic show where she would walk on a tightrope carrying so many things on her head and her arms. And then they did this performance for the king and queen and big shot ministers of the government. So they were impressed by their magic show that she gave the mother a very beautiful, her own very beautiful diamond necklace. So then her two boys grabbed the necklace and they started fighting for it. It's mine, no, it's mine. They were fighting so fiercely that finally they took the swords from their sheath and sliced his head. So then the mother was so overwhelmed with grief seeing her dead sons that she also sliced off her head, as did her husband. Then the workers, the cleaners, had to come and sweep off all the bodies and with their decapitated heads. And you can imagine how the king and queen felt. So the whole city was overwhelmed with grief. Until the next morning when they got a letter from the magician saying, well, you gave us a present for our first act, but you didn't give us any present for our second act. So actually, we're all fine. You can come over to our address. Here it is. This is our address. Come over and we're waiting for our surprise. So everyone was overjoyed and they went and the magician and his family were waiting for the king and queen with their garlands to welcome them. And then Gurudev said an even greater magician is what's his name? P.C. Sarkar.
P.C. Sarkar.
Huh?
P.C. Sarkar.
P.C. Sarkar. Huh? Who did a very amazing magic show. All the big shot government men came to his show and he told them to be there at 4 o'clock. And they're very important men, so 4:15 came and the magician still wasn't there. They were looking at their watch and were becoming angry. That, who does he think he is? We have very important things to do. 4:30 came on, they became more furious. By 5, they were ready to strangle him. So just after 5, he very nonchalantly walked on the stage and they were furiously screaming, how dare you do this? You're such important men. Who do you think you are? He said, what's the problem? They said, well, you said to come at 4 and now it's already after 5. He said, what do you mean? It's still 4. He said, no, it's after 5. So he said, well, I get your watches. And they looked at his watches and it was just 4. So they were amazed by the magic show that they had just witnessed. And so these are mundane people. What to speak of a demon named Hiranyakashipu, who is doing austerity to get the power to become immortal. And he had the power to stand on his tippy toes, on the points of his toes, and hold up his hands for 125 years. And he became so powerful by that austerity that he was shooting fire from his head, and all the higher planetary systems were becoming upturned. Oceans were going over mountains, and all the demigods were upset. That's how powerful he was. And then, because he was doing this austerity for so many years, during that time, an ant hill grew around his body, and all the ants ate his body until he was just a skeleton. But still, he was unaffected in terms of his consciousness and durability. So then, saying that he was having so much power that the universe could come to an end if they didn't do something about it, Lord Brahma came and poured water from his Kamandalu water pot over his head, body, and then he became a fresh young man again and begged for immortality. So this is a non-devotee. And then I think you may know the example of Kumarila Bhatt, who is not even a Vaishnava, he's a smart Brahmana. Almost a Vaishnava, but not quite. And he went to this Buddhist university in Jamadar, and the Buddhist teacher was teaching how God is impersonal or zero. And then this student, Kumarila Bhatt, defeated him to prove that God is a person. So the other students in class became furious, and they thought, he's not a Buddhist. Maybe he's a Vaishnava or something like that. We should do something to destroy him, because he embarrassed our teacher. So they made a conspiracy. They took him up to the top of a very high building, and they said to him, if your God is real, then you won't be killed when we throw you off this roof. So he said, yes, if my God is real, I won't be hurt. So they immediately threw him off this high skyscraper for that period, down to the ground. And they ran down full of joy, thinking, yeah, we got him, he's dead. And when they went down, they saw he just had some small fracture on his arm. And they said to him, why are you still alive? So he said, well, because I made a mistake. I said, if my God is real, then I won't be hurt. If I hadn't said if I just said, sure, my God is real and I won't be hurt, with that conviction, then nothing would have happened to me. He's already Vaishnava. And what to speak of Vaishnavas? Like, from here in Bangor, that wonderful graphic novel came out about King Chitraketu. And there, in order to teach his disciple a lesson, Angira Rishi, because his disciple, he knew his disciple wouldn't take any instructions from him, that don't get his son, it's just entangling. So his disciple, King Chitraketu, wanted his son so bad that in order to teach him that it's miserable to get more and more entangled, he himself became his disciple's son. And then the son was the cause of happiness to the king for many years, and then the son died at around 5 years old, and then he came back to life and gave him good instructions from the scripture, and then his father, the king, became a pure devotee. So another spiritual master who did that is Viswamitra Muni, who was the spiritual master of King Harishchandra. And King Harishchandra was attached to material truth, the morality of material truth. So he wanted to rip that conception out of him. So he made him give up the conception that he's the king, that this is his kingdom, that this is his treasury, that this is his wife, that this is his son. And he took the form of a snake and bit his son. And then his son died. Of course, later on, the son came back to life. But Viswamitra had the power to do that. So Param Gurudev said that all the these kind of pastimes of the spiritual master, of getting ill and then disappearing, which, when we look at him with our peacock feather eyes or eyes covered by cataracts of material conception, and the eyes covered by the desire to serve him and to serve his transcendental body with personal motivation. I'm so great because I'm the personal servant and nobody else is. I'm the most intimately connected, or would rather I did the best service. I kept him alive. All these personally motivated so-called services, Param Gurudev said that the pastime of both appearing and disappearing in this world for the pure devotee is one of unlimited joy, because he's not touched by the body, he's only touched by his, he's overwhelmed by the pastimes of his sister deity, Mr. Devi, Sri Sri Radha Krishna, and he's always absorbed 24 hours a day in his service to them. We say, I think many of you have second initiation from Guru Devi. That means Krishnanandaya. It's Krishna and it's Krishna. Krishna is Srimati Radhika. So Vidmahe, I know, I'm Gurudevaya Vidmahe. Vidmahe means I know that my Gurudev in his form of a Sakhi is always engaged in Ananda, in taking pleasure in his service to Krishna, and Krishna with a leaning towards Krishna, Srimati Radhika, and always giving pleasure to Srimati Radhika. So I meditate on him in this way, in his various services, and Prachodayat, I beg him to please reveal Prachista Rupena Udayat. Please reveal everything about yourself, what you look like, what your dress is, what your service is, what paraphernalia you carry, where you live, who's your so-called husband, all those kind of things. We beg him to reveal that. So he's actually on, because he's on that level, engaged in that service, 24 hours he's feeling unlimited bliss. There's one photograph of Srila Prabhupada that you'll see in the Lilamrita, Prabhupada's Lilamrita, where he's standing like with no shirt on, just his dhoti but no shirt, and there's a completely stark white background, and it was taken with a flash camera before he came to America. So this was like his passport picture. And so because it was a flash camera, you know, they have those terribly stark shadows. And you know, Prabhupada sometimes looks extremely great. So I said to him, oh, you look so, he wanted me to paint a painting of that. So he gave me the photo back in 1966 or 67. So I said to him, oh, you look so sad there, Prabhupada. And he said, no, it was a moment of ecstasy. So everything that happens to him, he's feeling unlimited joy. But when he's disappearing with our contaminated eyes due to serving him for our own personal benefit, he puts on, he manifests a Maya secret form to us so that we see that, oh, he's in so much pain that he's leaving this world. So Param Gurudev says this is actually magician on the stage. Narottam Das Thakur also did a magical act. He manifested himself as having being paralyzed, and he couldn't move. And his disciples prayed to him that, oh Gurudev, all these smart Brahmins who are against Vaishnavism, who say that by birth you're a Brahmana, not otherwise, if we have defeated them already in debate, but if now you have, if now you're paralyzed, they'll think, oh yes, because he offended us, therefore he's paralyzed, so please do something. Please get better right away so that we can defend your honor. So immediately he got better and started running around like a young boy, a young man. And then those smart Brahmins, caste Brahmins, they got paralysis and they were bitten by snakes, they became blind, and so many bad things happened to them. And then again he became paralyzed by his own sweet will. Not that he had to be, but he displayed that lila. But to speak of Prahlad Maharaj, who is a Jnani Bhakta. What time does this class go to? So Prahlad Maharaj is a Jnani Bhakta. That means Gurudev explained that you can tell how perfect the Guru is, how complete the Guru is, by how complete his Ishtadev or Ishtadevi is. So Prahlad Maharaj's Ishtadev is Lord Nrisimhadev, who is a plenary portion of Lord Krishna. And then somebody like Srila Gurudev, whose Ishtadev is Srimati Radhika, who is Guru of Krishna, the Supreme Guru of Krishna, is Krishna's state in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that Radharani is my Supreme Guru and I am her dancing pupil. Her frame causes me to dance many novel dances. Not in control, that okay, I'm dancing in control, but totally out of control, like a leaf is controlled by the wind, and it just goes out of its control. So Radharani is the most complete guru, being guru of Krishna, who is Purnatam, the most complete feature of the Supreme Lord. So such a guru, the divine of Rupa Goswami, is the most complete and powerful guru. He's lakh times more powerful than Prahlad Maharaj or Srila Haridas Thakur, who got beaten in 21 marketplaces and he didn't feel it at all. He just kept chanting, and his whippers were so frustrated that they said, "Why don't you please die? If you don't die, then we'll get killed by the king." So he said okay, and then he pretended to die, and they threw him in the river, and then he came out the other side as a fresh man with everything fine, although when they were beating him, he was practically down to the skeleton, just a few shreds of muscles and blood, and then he was perfectly fine. So Prahlad, also a Jnani Bhakta, even when he was given poison, even when he was put in the fire, even when he's thrown off the cliff, still Krishna kept saving him. He fell off the cliff, and whenever we would paint for Prabhupada Bhagavatam, he would always give us instructions on what things looked like. We couldn't imagine in our wildest imagination what anything looked like. So he wrote us in a letter that when Prahlad is falling, have Krishna there catching him. So in all the cases, Prahlad was in very severe, intense poison, and still he wasn't affected at all. It was tasted like nectar offered it to Krishna. So if this is all true, for those who don't even have that supreme Ishtadev is the most powerful, then what to speak Srila Gurudev, how untouched he is. We read that one who surrenders to the Guru, he takes away the karma of his devotees. So if he takes away the karma of millions of births of his devotees, which the only cause of suffering, what's the cause of suffering? If somebody would ask you, if you meet somebody on the street, and they ask you, what's the cause of suffering, what would you say? What would you say, Anita?
Your past deeds and the karma from
through your past deeds, and particularly your past sins. So if a pure devotee has no past sins, how can he possibly have any kind of suffering? Prabhupada used to very beautifully sing the prayers of Queen Kunti. And one of her verses, she says, Vaveshman Klesha Mananam Avidya Kama Karma Vi. That is, Vaveshman, this material world. The Veshman Kleshamananam. Klesh means suffering. We're all experiencing suffering of this material world. Prabhupada said the scientists are trying to figure out all the different kinds of causes of this, that, and the other thing, and doing, spending millions of dollars, making so many experiments. But in two lines, Kunti summed it all up. Veshman Kleshamananam. Everyone is in this material world suffering. Why? Avidya, due to ignorance. Avidya, karma, karma B. Because of sins, because of avidya, we're performing sins. And because of sins, we're suffering so much. So, I think you remember, in that book, Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers, by Bob, the, what do you call it? He was a Peace Corps worker. And he was asking Prabhupada so many questions. And he asked Prabhupada, do you get sick? And Prabhupada said, yes, I do. And he said, is that because of your karma? And Prabhupada said, yes, it is. And then he said, well, I thought the pure devotees have any karma. So Prabhupada said, yes, he doesn't. So Bob said, well, you're the best devotee. And Prabhupada said, no, I'm not. You're the best devotee. And then he went on to explain how some conditioned soul who's trying to be guru, he's like a small fire. That is, if you throw a lot of garbage in a small fire, it puts the fire out. So Krishna and Krishna's pure representative, they're like a big fire. No matter how much garbage you put in it, the fire eats that garbage up. No matter how many contaminated things, it eats it, and then that thing disappears, and it uses it as fuel, and it just gets bigger and bigger. And then, that means that the pure devotee is not touched by his disciple karma as well. So then Prabhupada said, just like Radharani, she's the greatest devotee, but she doesn't think she's a devotee at all. She thinks that if she has any favor from Krishna, it's due to her associates, not due to her own qualities. So in this way, Prabhupada was indirectly saying that that's what I'm too. I'm saying I'm not a devotee, but I really am. I'm also humble. So until I met Gurudev, in fact, there were so many things that until I met Gurudev, I didn't understand about Srila Prabhupada. And this was one of them. I'd always thought, because in 1974, Prabhupada was manifesting his illness lila now and then. And 1974, when he did it, he said, this is because of my disciples' sin. Because I initiated them, they're not following the regular principles. So therefore, it's manifest body. And so we believed it, and the result was that we tried harder to not do our sins. Because we didn't want to hurt Prabhupada. Because even though we didn't feel like we knew Krishna, we felt very grateful and loving to Srila Prabhupada. So, but we believed that he was suffering for our karma. So it wasn't until I met Gurudev, and I asked him about that when he was in Bali in the 90s. And he said, no, he's just like the same thing Prabhupada said. He's like the big fire that he takes the karma and he burns it. He doesn't suffer the karma. A cheating guru, he will suffer the karma, and not only with the disciple, for the pure devotee, he takes away the karma from the disciple, so the disciple doesn't have to suffer it, or the disciple just suffers a summary punishment of the law of karma. That is, if he gets a cut finger, the disciple thinks, my arm should have knocked off. But because I've taken the shelter of a bona fide guru, it just comes on as a little cut finger. So, why did I say that?
Takes it and burns it,
but he doesn't suffer it. So, in this way, we also can't say that Srila Gurudev is suffering from our karma. because the pure devotee doesn't take it. The chi guru, he takes the suffering of all of his disciples combined together, and the disciple also takes it. Nobody loses it. Everybody loses, but nobody loses their karma. Even Prabhupada was saying that the temple president, say, of any of the kind of temples, if the temple didn't help the devotees in their Krishna consciousness, he would also have to suffer a portion of the karma of the, of the people who come to his temple and the devotees under his care. So they gave different examples of how sometimes the pure devotee appears to be ordinary, but whatever he does is for the benefit of the universe. Like, for example, we asked him in 1997 about Prabhupada and the whole Gurukula fiasco where the children were being beaten, and did Prabhupada know or didn't he know? And Gurudev said he definitely knew. But even when, the reason he didn't stop it, when he didn't stop it, and there was a point where he stopped it, but even when he didn't stop it, the children were only getting a very slight summary punishment of what they deserved because they were under his shelter. Like a big rich man's son does a criminal act, and the rich man is a friend of the judge. So the judge, because he wants to give favor to the rich man's son, he could fine him $1 million, but he only fines him 1 cent. So the rich man is the spiritual master, and the judge is Krishna, and we're the criminals. So when Srila Gurudev was explaining about Srila Prabhupada's situation with the Gurukula, and how he did know, and he also did know when he made sannyasis that they would fall down, but he gave them sannyas in order to purify the whole planet, because they were able to preach with mighty strength and everybody followed them, and also to give them sukriti, and also to give the people who followed them sukriti. So he gave the example that Krishna also does these things. He appears to be an illusion or affected by material nature so that he can perform his pastime for the benefit of the universe. For example, Krishna was shot in the foot by a hunter, and then it appeared like he left the material body behind. One, it was to fool the atheists, and number two, it was to help us understand so many things in relation to why he came and how he came to protect the righteous and defeat evil. So many different reasons Krishna had for the way that he left. Like Ram, when Sita told Ram to go and get the deer, dead or alive, it seemed like Ram was believing that deer was a real deer and not a demon. But why did that happen? The whole pastime was a mind to go on. Or why did the Yadus fight? Krishna could have easily told them that what would happen if they would take that rice wine, but he didn't. Krishna could have told the Pandavas what would happen if they gambled, that it was loaded dice, but he didn't. Why? Because he wanted something to happen for the benefit of the universe. So similarly, whatever Gurudev is doing is under his full will, he's totally in control, and he can easily manifest on any scan a picture of what looks like some kind of disease. And he can even make it feel like that to someone's touch. If somebody's touching his body, they feel, oh, here's a disease in this part of his body. Because he has those mystic powers. So on one side, he wants us to feel a sense of imminent, the fear of imminent separation from him, and the desire to figure out different ways to be comfortable and healthy, but simultaneously to know that he's doing it by his mystic powers just to bring us closer to him, just to make us serious that what if I don't get it together and bring him into my heart and enter his heart and become one with him like we pray in the song, oh Gurudev, please make me one with you. Guru Maka Padma Vaikya Chitete Korya Aishya. Please make me one with your words, one with your heart. If I don't get it together soon, and if he goes, then even though he's still here, I'll feel that I didn't take advantage of his presence. I could have come so much closer to him. So everything that he does is purposeful. So not only did we learn about what Prabhupada's philosophy was on the pure devotee manifesting illness or invalidity, but there's so many other things that showed me, which gave me so much more faith in Gurudev, that he's really Prabhupada's successor. Because so many things that I had misunderstood from Srila Prabhupada, I was learning about what Prabhupada really meant by my association with Srila Gurudev. And we'll discuss more about that in the next class. Ask if there's any questions in just a few minutes. Just a few more little remembrances of Srila Prabhupada. We were in New Jersey with him when he was having his so-called heart attack. And he had his three permanent servants there, Kirtananda and Govindadasi and her husband, and then two of us, we had our temple in New York, and two of us would come every day to be with him. So on the day that I was there, he took us to sit with him on a blanket on the ocean. You know how people go and sit on blankets and they put their shoe on the corners so the blanket would blow away? So we were all sitting there with Prabhupada facing the Atlantic Ocean. And as we were discussing earlier with Shankarshan Prabhu and Sudarshan Prabhu and Radhapriya and Shalasi, when we were sitting there, that there were some boys and they were wearing those black wet skin suits and they were surfing on the waves. So Prabhupada was telling us, we were all looking at boys surfing, and Prabhupada told us that there is some enjoyment here, because this world is a perverted reflection of the material world. But at any moment there can be a big wave, and once the boys will drown. So there's Ananda here, but that Ananda, because it's a reflection of the spiritual world, which is unlimited in Ananda, that Ananda is mixed with the modes of nature, and so it can't be tasted. We can't taste pleasure. So we want to, because it is a perverted reflection of that realm. So just like sweet rice mixed with sand. Sweet rice is very nice, but if it's mixed with sand, then it can't be tasted. So in that way, in all circumstances, Prabhupada was giving us so much nice shiksha. And then, after we came back from the beach sitting, we went into Prabhupada's house. They rented him a house after he came out of the hospital. And in fact, when I asked Prabhupada in the hospital, before he went to New Jersey, how do we see this? He said the same thing that Gurudev taught us later, which is to see the both things. If we just see that he's a mystic yogi, and well, I don't care about him, I'm not going to bring him any fruits or anything when I come to the hospital. That's something like, I guess, Prabhu Sringadev. And then if we just think that he needs my help, then we're committing Vaishnava Aparad of thinking that the Guru is an ordinary person. And in fact, that reminds me of two letters that Srila Prabhupada wrote in at that time when he was in the hospital, and then when he got out later, he was being taken care of by Kirtananda. And then later on, Kirtananda left and committed so many offenses to Prabhupada. Were you there at that time, Fred?
No.
You came a little later. So Prabhupada wrote a letter to two devotees, to Madhusudan and to Prananda, that because Kirtananda was thinking that Maya depended upon his help, that's why Maya captured him. And that's why he lost his Krishna consciousness. Actually, I was just giving, and he admitted it then, I was just giving him an opportunity to serve. So when we came back from the beach, Kirtananda was there in the kitchen because he was Prabhupada's cook. So he asked Prabhupada that I don't understand a philosophical point, which is that God is absolute, we're coming from God, so why aren't we absolute also? It was a little impersonalist question. So Prabhupada replied that the sun is the source of the sunshine. The sunshine is eternal, just like the sun is eternal, but still the sunshine is subordinate to the sun. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
He was always making everything sound so simple. In fact, one devotee asked him around that time, that the philosophy is so complex, but you make it sound so simple. How do you do that? So he said, just like God is there, therefore his energy is there. Therefore the material world is there. God is there. God is great. You are not great. Therefore you are not God, so you should surrender to God. And sometimes the philosophy was quite complex. So, in the evenings, when I first met him, when I was first coming to his classes in October of 1966, his morning classes were Lord Chaitanya's teachings to Srila Sanatana Goswami, Sanatana Shiksha, about the opulence and sweetness of the Lord. So I'm going to ask Anita, I'm going to ask her to tell what I tell whenever I tell this part. He was saying how Lord Chaitanya is teaching Sanatana Goswami about Krishna's opulence. For example, his opulence of taking birth. Every kana, it is a fraction of a second. He takes birth in a different universe. And he stays in any given universe for 125 years. So Anita's going to tell this inconceivable opulence of Krishna. Can you turn around? She's heard it like 20 billion times.
Though not yet realized it at all. So in the first universe, Krishna and all his eternal associates, In the first universe, Krishna and all his eternal associates, they appear in the pastime and so on. But then just 1 second later, in another universe, Krishna and all his associates again appear, inconceivably. So in the first universe, it's now the second second. And in the second universe, it's the first second. Then we come to the third second in a different universe. Krishna again appears with all of his associates. So it's now the first second in the third universe, the second second in the second universe, and the third second in the first universe. And this way Krishna's pastimes are going on in unlimited universes.
For 125 years.
For 125 years. And so it's It's completely inconceivable, actually.
How many universes is in at the same time? No, that's the inconceivable.
Yeah. You can keep calculating.
You could probably do it, too.
So also, we were all in personalists at that time. So Prabhupada was giving so many examples as the devotees were wearing the, like half, everybody looked like, all the men looked like, it was Kartik, just before the last day of Kartik, but not to follow Chaturmasi. And everybody had the beards and the long hair. And half the devotees, we have these blankets over their heads like a tree. I'm sitting there during Prabhupada's class in the morning, and he would just go on speaking, because he knew that he was being taped by the reel-to-reel tape, and that gradually it would get all over the world, so he didn't mind it. And he knew these people would get secreted too. So in those classes, Prabhupada would give his analogies to defeat impersonalism. And I'll tell you one, and then we'll end. The impersonalists say that when a water jug is being filled up, it makes a sound, and then when it's finally filled up, it's silent. So in the process of self-realization, and what to speak of just people who are engaged in sense gratification, they're engaged in so much talk about this or that, but when one is finally filled up and complete in self-realization, one becomes silent. Nothing. So Prabhupada said, where's the analogy? If you're giving an analogy, then there has to be so many similar points. But am I a water jug? Can a living entity be compared to a water jug? Rather, atato brahmajigasa. Now that you've come to the human form of life and you've passed through billions of births of sense gratification, now it's to inquire what is the absolute truth. And a fully self-realized soul, that's all he's talking about. So Prabhupada gradually purified our soul. So those were a few little instances, and tomorrow we'll tell some more. Tomorrow we have a class at night too? Here? Okay. A few more incidences. Also some more ways that Srila Gurudev taught us what Prabhupada's real teaching is, and clarified his teaching, and more remembrances of Srila Gurudev.
Maybe I should have said this in the beginning, I think. But I was on a morning walk in the Mathura, and Gurudev was mentioning Kirtan Maharaj speaks, and Ban Maharaj speaks, and he mentioned someone out here, and when Shamarani speaks, you should know that I am speaking Buddha. Mm-hmm. And I even told that to Shamarani, and she started jumping.
So, well, jumping in hopes for the future.
We're all very fortunate. Please tell your friends to come through, because Shamarani Didi is. And there was so much association with Srila Prabhupada and Srila, it's not ordinary. The unique fact about Chamarani speaking is that she never said anything except Prabhupada said over the video notice. Once in 19, I forget the year, we were in North Carolina. And Prabhupada was supposed to come, he didn't come, and we were all devastated. Chamarani came late, and at the end, she was introduced by Bhagavan Swami, and he said, and now Shamarani Didi will speak some Hare Katha. And I still remember what she said. She said, I don't speak Hare Katha. Gurudev speaks Hare Katha. I report on Hare Katha. So because she's so much concerned with keeping her heart close to Gurudev, great blessing to have an association. We're all very fortunate. I hope you can all tell your friends and make sure you come, because it's a very special opportunity. Thank you, Shamarani Didi.
Maharaj is like Prabhupada in that they like to encourage the fallen soul. Like once I was having a fight with my husband, and so I came in late for class. And it wasn't class yet, just the kirtan was over when I walked in. And I came in the store, let's say that's the back door where the bathroom is, and the Prabhupada's sitting here on the Vyasasana, and there's like 200 devotees from all over the East Coast. So I was just angry.
I'm glad that I know how it is.
So I came in when the kirtan was just over, and everybody was bowing down. And as soon as everybody got up, Prabhupada talk to me across the whole 200 people, because I had done a painting of Sukaram, Hanuman, and Lakshman, which I didn't really, like a lot of the pictures we did by reading the transcriptions, the manuscripts from Prabhupada's books before they were printed, that was his order to do that. But this one I had just copied from an Indian print, and the only thing I added was that I changed Ram from blue, because they had it in the Indian print, to green, which is his actual color. So my mind can imagine where it was. The picture was on the wall, so Prabhupada called out, everyone was just starting to sit up from the vacancies, and he said, "Did you do that painting?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "You are already in Vaikuntha." Any question or comment?
Like, you were speaking about the relationship, like the material world and Maya, like that. So, like, it seems like the jivas are given, this material universe is created for the jivas to give a relationship with Krishna. Like, what do you like to speak on? Seems like, I mean, is there any purpose? Like, is this the only purpose? So that we can have a relationship with Krishna. Otherwise, I see there is no other purpose.
You're asking that, is there any other purpose for Krishna to create this universe and put us in it than to have a relationship with him? So I'll give an answer from Prabhupada's early days to make it simple. He said that a person has a son who's very naughty, so naughty that the father can't discipline him. So he sends them to, what is that, a reform school, where there are very strict disciplinary actions and teachers, so that the child can learn how to behave well in that strict place. But it's out of the father's love, because he wants to have a loving relationship with the son. But the son doesn't want to have it that direct way. So he sends them to the reform school, the child gets good, and then the child can come back and have a good relationship with the father. To use that analogy in simple terms. Any other?
You said we had to do both. See Gurudev as needing our service, but also seeing him as perfected mystic.
Acting with him as though, maybe I didn't say it right, thank you for clarifying. Acting as though he needs it, but knowing that he doesn't.
So inside we can be completely situated in thinking him as perfected yogi.
If we're qualified to, yes. Just like there were two disciples of Madhavendra Puri, and thanks for reminding me of this. One was Ishwara Puri, who was cleaning his stool and urine and singing kirtan to him and telling him pastimes of Krishna. And then the other one was Ramchandra
Puri,
who thought that he was suffering because he was crying and calling out, "Oh Krishna, now you're in, how can I reach you? Now you're in Mathura." He was actually saying a verse in the mood of Srimati Radhika that only he and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Radharani can stand, not a fourth person. So, but he was thinking that he was lamenting materially. Like sometimes the Buddha would say, "What do you mean, Shamrani, that Gurudev doesn't feel this? I heard him moaning in the middle of the night." So, So he thought that he was lamenting materially. So he said, "Gurudev, don't lament, just meditate on impersonal Brahman." So Madhavendra Puri said, "Get out of my sight immediately, go out, go away. If I see you at the time of death, I don't know what my destination will be, because you know you're such a brain down." Whereas Ishwara Puri, because he was seeing him as he is and serving him as if he needed his help and with love, so he was blessed that he would become the spiritual master of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Okay.
So, like that, serving him as if, knowing that he's not. In fact, Madhava Priya Prabhu told me, because Madhava Priya is serving one of Gurudev's personal servants now, because he had lots of experience with serving his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Pramod Puri Goswami Maharaj, for several months before he departed from the vision of this world a few years ago. And he said that Gurudev came to the servants at that time. He said, don't ever think that he's an ordinary human being. Don't think that he needs your help. Always know that he's transcendental. In our stage, we'll always think that he needs our help because of our material vision. But a pure devotee, disciple, he knows that he doesn't, but he acted as though he does. And I can't make you understand it because I can't understand it because I'm not on that level. How the two things can simultaneously.
Can I ask one more question and expectation?
If you don't expect that much of an answer, you can ask another question.
There was one story of my father who was going to his village, you know, and sometimes I'm listening to that name.
Uh-huh.
And one going to Kaaba, and he was driving him crazy out of our love for him.
Yeah, right. So just like now, we're just doing the same thing. Driving us crazy.
The extension of my question is, if you're not in the situation where you're able to offer direct service to Srila Gurudev, in other words, you can't act as if he requires something from you bodily, then what's appropriate? Is it appropriate for me to go on with my service with the conception that Srila Gurudev is existing on the transcendental platform and has no trouble here? Or should I always be considering, oh, my Gurudev is having difficulty and I'm praying for him to not have difficulty?
Yeah, just imagine, after hearing all of these mystic powers of these other devotees, and simply by a glance or by the touch, just like Jana Sharma, who is a disciple of Gop Kumar. Gop Kumar simply touched him on his head. He got all realization, he's free from all karma, and closely opened his eyes, there he is on the Goloka Vrindavan, thinking my Gurudev has difficulties. That means I'm thinking that he's affected by the material nature. But I can certainly appreciate that he's doing this amazing magical feat and mystical thing, which is affecting all the devotees around the world of his who are wanting to come closer to him and giving them so many realizations and deep thoughts and detachment and so many things that you hear from devotees around the world, that they're feeling closer to Gurudev now that he's doing what he's doing. And with no power, like I remember but one of the last days going to Delhi from Govardhan, and it was like the day where he started talking and gave that Hindi speech about all of you coming to Navadvip. So he's sitting in his wheelchair, they rolled him out onto the veranda, and then he doesn't say anything, but his eyes are brighter blue than ever before. And there's about, I don't know, 500 devotees standing all around on the lawns and on the ledges, all over the place, looking down. And Gurudev is just going like this, like finding him, like that kind of spiritual mystic, with wide open eyes. It's like really amazing, like a Bhagavatam flash or something. And when Vasanthi will tell you her story. She and a lot of devotees were in the Commonwealth game, and she was feeling while Gurudev was at Janakpuri, and they were all feeling so much strength from Gurudev as they were selling the books and getting donations, which means getting the results of people's energy. And then Vrajanath only let her come in because he didn't want a lot of devotees to go into Gurudev at one time. So she's going to tell you what happened.
So, Gurudev was sitting on his veranda in Janakpuri, and we had a big bag of, 25,000 rupees from books. And I told Gurudev, we had on a piece of paper that we distributed, 4,000 small books, and we had 25,000 rupees. And he put his hands in the bag, and the money was, you know, like rupees or like, they're all wrinkled, and you know, we hadn't like made it nice or anything. And he put his hand in the bag and he tapped it 3 times, and it was really nice. I felt that he was blessing all those souls who gave. It was really nice.
I can't help it until we can't get it until we get it. That's why in Jagadama we see again and again that the guru is telling the disciple, you'll never get it until you get it, until you do bhajan. I'll just tell you one quick thing that when I first met Gurudev, and I told him one of my deep sorrows was that I have a lot of intellectual understanding of the philosophy, and I go around the world preaching for Prabhupada, but I don't have any vision. So I thought that he was going to say, oh, that's all right. I thought he was going to say, intellectual understanding is not everything, which I already knew. But instead, he said intellectual understanding is no understanding. And then he gave the example of the rasagula. He said, just like if you've never had a rasagula, and I'm trying to explain to you what a rasagula is, that it's, can you imagine that you've never had a rasagula? It's hard, let's try. That the size of a ping pong ball, it's white, it feels like a sponge, it drips down the side of your mouth, tastes like a combination of a honey and an apple. It sounds slurpy. And what else can we say about a rasagula?
Too many of
wet bread.
Yeah, it feels like wet bread. Sticky, it's sticky.
If you eat any of them, your stomach will turn upside down.
Right. So does that help? It'll help when I hand you one and you taste it. Until then, even though I'm a self-realized soul in rasagulas, I can't make you understand until you taste it. And when Gurudev told me that, a light bulb went off in my head. This is in 1992, like one of the first 5 or 6 meetings that I ever had with him. A light bulb went off in my head, remembering that Prabhupada had given a similar analogy, but I couldn't get the depth of it until Gurudev said it, and then I thought, now I understand what Prabhupada meant. Prabhupada did the same thing with a jackfruit. In those days, we were in New York City, couldn't have imagined what a jackfruit was. And Prabhupada said, if I tell you what a jackfruit is, it looks like a punched in
basketball.
It looks, the skin looks like the skin of a snake, and it feels like a person with a 5-day old, and inside it's gooey like an egg, and it tastes like maybe a combination of potato and honey and an apple, and it's really delicious. Does that give you any conception of a jackfruit? And at the same time, am I saying anything wrong? All right, isn't that a good description? Could you give a better one? Not too much better. So Prabhupada gave the same thing, that until we're realized, we can't get it. But something's better than nothing. Yes?
Like, you're speaking about a spiritual master giving up a disciple. Like, is there any, like, if a spiritual master wants, can he give up a disciple? Like, he accepts, he gives him diksha and he accepts him. But later he sees he's not obeying him, and he's too, you know, against him, or he's causing harm to society or himself or his disciples. And can he, does he give up?
Like you mentioned in my
or is apparently, he puts him down, or does he really give him up?
Well, we see in the example of Madhavendra that he gave up
Ramchandra
Puri, that Ramchandra Puri became a criticizer of devotees and a criticizer of the Supreme Lord himself. So we see that does happen. But it's getting rather late, and still many of you have to go home. Do you want to say something important?
Well,
you raised your hand. Or did you already speak?
I just thought it was about the class. I enjoy it. Thank you for your work.
Was that clear to you? Well, I'm afraid you can't. What I said to you?
Yes.
One question now. That when Krishna was blowing the flute, when gopis came, some of them were stopped by their parents. But the so-called parents, are they abhimana?
Those
were stopped in the apratakunda or pratakunda.
You're asking that the husband who stopped, but not the parents, because they were living with their husband. But who stopped them? Were they what? Did they really?
In this Prakat Leela.
In this Prakat Leela, my understanding is that they have husbands, and by the arrangement of Yoga Maya, she created duplicate gopis so that the husband didn't really know ultimately that their wives were going, and they were satisfied that their wives were still at home. And sometimes Gurudev says that the husbands would stop the wives, and those ones who were stopped, it was because they needed to feel the intensity of more separation to burn up any last obstacle in their being able to join Krishna in the Rasa Leela. So they were at home, but then the intensity of the fire of separation burnt up those last obstacles so that they could take Krishna in their heart and embrace him there, and then get qualified to go with him the next night or later that night.
Their husbands are not a, that's not the origin swarup. It's made by Yoga Maya. Arrangement by Yoga Maya.
The husband?
Husband?
I think that's out of my realm. You have to think about it or look up something and tell you tomorrow. So your question is, were the husbands not real but just in Yoga Maya when it was Prakat Leela? Is that your question? If nobody knows, I'll look it up. I'll try to look it up and tell you tomorrow.
Krishna's shadows.
Huh?
The manifestation.
I know Abhimanyu is Krishna's shadow. Is that the way it is for the others too? I can't answer this question, but we're going off topic, I think.
No, we learned today. No?
Well, that's already off